He's a young savant, right?
That's apparent.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Larry Miller and Ellen Bravo, husband and wife team, who've written a great book, Standing Up for the Tales of the Struggle. And where can you get the book?
Everywhere books can be bought, but especially we hope you'll get it from your independent bookstore. It's published by Hardball Press.
All right, Larry, you wanted to say.
Well, one of the things that, before we went off, before Ellen was talking about what we're taught and what our kids are taught. And, you know, you have this whole critical race theory thing, which is just that's a setup. Because really what they're talking about, these critical race theory critics, what they're talking about is our kids being taught real history, being taught Black history, Latino history, the history of the working class. And we have to fight for that to happen. My students, one of the chapters is called We Won't Let You Pollute Our Playground. And it happened at Custer High School, which is now Obama.
Right.
Appropriately so, goes from being a racist general to being one of the first African American president, we were doing a unit on environmental racism and how there's distribution and leftover centers of pollution all over Milwaukee, and we were scouting it out and actually looking at different places in Milwaukee. And my students went out and found an oil spill and organized a campaign against it. And so, if we weren't doing this unit on environmental racism and talking about how segregation and the history of racism even comes down to the environment and how Black communities are discriminated against, this would not have happened. And the students won a great victory, and it is now a playground, an MPS owned playground with the most modern of equipment, and there's no pollution there, but. The book shows students as organizers, and students are organizing today. They were back then, and they were in the 60s also. So that's a very important component that we talk about.
You know, the union makes us strong. I've always loved that the union makes us strong. Whoever came up with that. You know, it's more than a cliche, right?
Yeah. So the chapter, The Union Makes Us Strong, I'm so proud when we did our book event in New York, there was a woman named Natalie Monares, who's one of the worker leaders at the Staten Island JFK 8 Amazon warehouse that successfully organized a union. And they did lots of creative things. And she said, I love this chapter because it's just what we did, especially organizing in the bathrooms and using workers who were inside as part of the organizing team rather than just having these outsiders who've never worked there. And the other thing that's really exciting about that chapter is it shows in real time. It's one of the reasons why we wanted to write fiction, because we understand the power of story to move people, to connect with people. It's why we wrote it in the language you were saying you were glad to read. It was easy to read because there's an example in there, and it's much easier to read it in that kind of story than have somebody preach it at you about what it means to fight against inequality. So there's a white woman, there's a question is, should we bring up pay inequality? There's a two-tier workforce at this call center. All the Black workers who were hired later are in the lower tier pay. But of course, they're not the only ones. White workers are too, if they're hired later, right? And so when they talk about the importance of bringing this up for the Black workers, this white woman says, well, aren't white workers going to benefit too? And this Black worker says to her, bingo, maybe that's the point, that racism hurts everybody. And that getting over that is what helps them win the union election.
You know, for those of you who are listening and And now maybe you guys will see. Because what I mean by that is, I always tell you guys what, I'm a union man, okay? And so, you know, only a union man would be having this great conversation about unionism. And so, you know, bear with us because, you know, this is, there are many of you in this audience who are union people too. And so we don't get a chance often enough to talk about our story. And hopefully, what my hope is that there'll be more people and more people and more people who'll be able to talk about the stories that we are talking about. You know, the union makes us strong. You talked about it in the book. I can tell you from my own life experience and just, you know, I was the kind of guy who they used to bet that I was going to get fired, right? I'm telling you, they bet that I would not make it through. Because I was the kind of guy who would push the envelope. And the only reason I made it through was because of the union. Because there were people who were in management, you know, supervisors and whatnot, who would really be just difficult to people. And I remember many of them, younger guys, younger white guys, being disrespectful to the older black men of my father's generation and mistreating them. And so they didn't know any better because they were afraid. They came here from the South. And so that's what they were used to. But here I was, a young guy born in the North, and watching this, and I would often speak up on behalf of those men because of the disrespect. And plus, Larry, as you stated, had just come through the civil rights struggle, lived it, right? And so based on having seen what I saw coming up as a young boy, and with the civil rights struggle and being able to be a part of it, because it played out on television before the entire world, we could see the injustice and the fight for justice and for rights. And so here I was, when I came in as a young guy, I would push for that, you know, not just for me, but for everybody. And so they said, well, he's not going to make it, you know. And I'm still surprised that I made it, but it was clearly that there was something in somebody bigger than myself that band together and gave me a voice and prevented people who really wanted to get rid of me.
Yeah.
For speaking the truth. And that's what unions represented. And that's even kind of what they represent now. And I don't know who. And so when you hear people who speak against unions, well, unions are for people who are lazy and you've heard this.
Oh, yeah.
And who can't stand on their own. You know, I don't need a union, even though you're in a union and you benefit from the union. I don't need a union because I come to work every day. I do my job and I'm better than the other guys. And, well, you know, you can think that. But if they took the union away from you, you would be out on an island. So, you know, the book and the beauty of it means probably more to me than it does to maybe people who are going to buy the book and read it. But, and I suggest that anybody within the sound of my voice who loves reading would get this book, because it's good reading. You'll go through it in no time because you get riveted to it and can't put it down. You guys are great writers.
Thank Thank you.
You really, I would think, Larry, most of that came from her.
No question. Because when originally, the way it started was I had written some essays about my work in the South.
Right.
And, you know, I was like, okay, so I gave it to people, said, this is really interesting, but it didn't take traction. So I went to Ellen, I said, what if we wrote fiction, took these essays and wrote fiction and combined it with all the work that you've done, and you've written all sorts of things.
Right.
And she, you know, Ellen said, great. And so we worked very well together, but she's the writer amongst us, that's for sure.
Yeah, Ellen, what are some of the key takeaways that you want people to get from the book?
Well, first of all, we hope that they understand that you don't always win if you stand up for yourself, but you never win if you don't. We hope that they'll understand that organizing is about building community and trust and joy. We hope they'll understand that change has to come from the bottom up, not the top down. That people from all over can be allies and partners, but it's the people of the most at stake that will be the drivers of the kind of change we all need. And we hope that they'll understand that the people who are against us, it's very hard to grow up in this society and not be, if you're white, not be influenced by racism, if you're not female, not to be interested by misogyny, by homophobia, etc. But that by building relationships, we can have each other's back and then walk arm in arm, and that's how we win.
Larry?
Yeah, to me, it's very important that our perspective. We don't just do this out of empathy. This is self liberation. This is everybody's liberation.
Right.
And our view has always been, and I was taught this from even from my parents that came out of World War II and very anti-racist, working class folks, said we have to all be in this together. We have to build coming out of World War II, build a new society is kind of how they looked at it, and taught me that. And so it's critical that we are for everybody's. Our stake is in the stake of these young people who are fighting against police repression, against LGBT kids. Our liberation is completely bound up with immigrants.
So Larry, hold that thought. We're going to do one more segment. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. I had something to say when I was in the Smith Studio. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. My guest again is Larry Miller and Ellen Bravo, and they've written a great book, Standing Up, Tales of the Struggle. I just wanted to make sure we wrapped it up, guys, and that we gave you both a fair amount of time. Was there something, Ellen, you've written three other books. Was there something liberating? What was it after you completed this book? And clearly you've written it from the recesses of your soul. The person that you are is in the book. If anybody wants to know who Ellen Bravo is, when they read the book, they'll know a caring person who is kind, considerate, visionary, sees the world through a collective lens, not elevating yourself above others, being a part of the collective, which is kind of what would make our nation a better place if we all could just, you know, come down off our high horses and say, hey, we're only on this planet for a short period of time. And so none of us are better than anybody else. We're here, and in the twinkling of an eye, we're gone. And so what do we do of consequence while we're here? That's kind of what's in your book, right?
Thanks so much. I think another way I'd say it is this, that we hear people, well-meaning people, who say, we have to believe in ourselves. You can be anything you want. Well, yeah, I want everyone to believe in themselves, but I also want them to know there are barriers. They are real. They need to be removed. So when you can't do everything you want, it isn't only your fault. And understanding the power of the collective, of what it means when we work together for change, when we admire everybody's strengths and get to the heart of the problem, and not just how do we jump over the hoops, but remove the hoops. That's what we really want. And the other thing I just want to say, we've been proud that a lot of people have said that the book made them laugh, as well as making them cry. Humor is so important to us, and it's been a really big part of our family. Our kids make us laugh all the time,
right,
make fun of ourselves, and having that sense of creativity and humor in struggle as well as in life is really important. We hope that's another thing that comes out in the book.
You and Larry have been in this fight a long time. Larry, why are you still in the fight?
I don't know any better. No, this is, you know, it's the human, to me, it's the human experience. And it's part of who I am and part of who we are. And we want to share. By the way, your description of Ellen is right on. She tried. She is who you described. And I am fortunate to have lived my life with her. I've benefited from that, and she's tried to help me make me the better me. And but that's how it works.
Well, but dare I say, there's never been a wife who hasn't tried to make her husband a better,
yes.
I digress.
Sometimes successful, sometimes not. We all have our ups and downs, right?
You know, guys, I don't want to let you go without, again, where people can buy the book. And those kinds of things.
So we have a website, ellenbravo.com, just my name, ellenbravo.com. And if you go there, there are links to how you can order it from Hardball Press, the publisher. You can get it at your independent local bookstore, but also anywhere that books are sold.
And I just wanted to say that the amazing artist and painter Adela Wells did the cover for us, and we are so proud that she was willing to do that, because she herself is an organizer. She met Ellen through 9 to 5, and she was happy to do this for the cover of the book. So not only do you get the book, but you get the art of an amazing artist.
You certainly had some excerpts from some powerful union people who read the book and echoed the sentiments about what was in the book and what it meant to them.
Yeah, we were very proud of that. Liz Schuler from the AFL-CIO, and a number of people who are labor educators. Bill Fletcher, who works with the AFG, the government workers, and lots of other people. Pramila Jayapal wrote a wonderful thing. She said it's great to see people grappling, white people grappling with racism, men grappling with misogyny, and people learning how to take on the bullies and the bosses, and that's just what we want people to think.
Working on a job is tough enough. Can you imagine what it must have been like without unions? I mean, there was a time when there weren't unions, right?
Yeah, but for a lot of people, that time is still now.
Right.
So many, particularly immigrant workers, and workers of color and females, work in, food processing, in care facilities, in the fields, and in so many in restaurants where they have no protections, where they have sub-minimum wage, and the power of organizing in those places too, you can see what a big difference it makes and the importance of all of us coming together to get to the heart of the problems.
All right, that's a wrap. I want to thank again a great husband and wife team. Troublemakers. What did John Lewis say? Make good trouble. Miss Ellen Bravo and Larry Miller. Standing Up, Tales of a Struggle is the name of the book. Get it. And you'll enjoy it, I guarantee you. Guys, thank you. Look forward to continuing to see you in the struggle.
And Earl, thank you so much for having this station and giving people a voice. It's so important.
Well, it's not my station.
But, this program.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. See you later. We'll be back. All right.
Your savior. Brian made you give it.
Mr. Morrell, give me high five. 2 times in a co-defendant, judging my life. Backpedaler, what they say you do to cha-cha. I'ma stand on it, 6'5", from 5'5". Fun fact, I ain't taking back. Like it when they pro-black, but I'm more quarterback. Tell me where the money at, hey, where the homies at. Universal call out, I can remember something.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And yeah, I overindulged. But I really do think that, and thank Ellen Bravo, if you don't know anything about 9 to 5, that woman has been at the forefront for decades of fighting for women's rights nationally. That's who she is. And has done some great things, and she's still at it. And her husband, Larry Miller, is a retired school board president of Milwaukee Public Schools, also at the forefront of the fight. And again, the name of their book, Stand Up, Tales of a Struggle. But let me get to this, because now, man, you know, Connor, I told you at times I sleep with my fist balled up, right?
Why?
Because I get so angry about some of the stuff that happens, right? Mm. I mean, I'm watching what they're doing to Mandela Barnes, and they are saying, you know, so what did Mandela Barnes say? Mandela Barnes said, the founding of this nation was not a good situation. Was he right? Is there anybody who could say the founding of this nation, what took place in this country, in its founding, was something to be proud of?
I don't really understand why a conservative would criticize. I mean, it does make sense why they would criticize him on that point, because I think a lot of conservative thinkers and politicians tend to, you know, promulgate the American narrative, right? The American Revolution, patriotism. And so when they see someone that's even, any politicians, like even slightly critical, right, of, and there is truth to it. That's the thing. Like, there is truth. I mean, to many, it was such a completely different time when America was established. Yes, the principles in the Constitution are valid and stand up in some way to this day, but at the same time, they weren't applied to different communities. They weren't applied to African Americans. They weren't applied to certain immigrant groups. They weren't applied to the Native Americans that live in the country. So just by pointing that out, that doesn't mean automatically that someone is saying that, oh, our constitutional principles are wrong. I want to tear down the foundation of America, just because they're not peddling the same narrative, right? That you believe in, you know.
Man, to say that Mandela Barnes said something in error,
yeah,
about the truth of the founding of the nation, and then, you know, be made to look like a person who is some kind of a criminal for having said it. It just angers me to no end, because Ron Johnson and Republicans are getting traction from other people who agree with that. I mean, what the hell are you talking about? I know the history of this nation. You know the history of this nation. What happened to the Native Americans? How can you write that out of history? How can you say that was a good thing? And so because Mandela Barnes, somebody asked him a question, and he said, well, you know, what happened historically in the founding of this nation was not good. He was telling the truth. What the hell are you talking about? He was telling the truth. And so if he's going to be penalized by people who, for telling the truth, it's part of what is wrong with our country. Listen. You know, I get it. It hurts some people. It makes some people feel angry because somebody, you know, because, you know, they don't want to think about America from that perspective. Just because you don't want to think about it from that perspective doesn't mean it wasn't the truth. And the fact that a man who's telling the truth can somehow, you know, be challenged and charged with being somebody other than American is absolutely ridiculous. Bring him up, man, because I'm ready for him. You know. So CJ, what did Mandela Barnes say wrong about the founding of this country?
We've come a long ways from that.
No, wait, listen. And it's not. It's wait a minute, man. Wait a minute. It's okay. No, because don't come up with "we've come a long way." Nobody's asked about "we come a long way." The question was about the founding of the country.
He's doing it to drive home the separation of our Americans. We had elected a black president twice, to still claim, and the mere fact that Mandela Barnes wrote the bill for no cash bail.
Wait a minute, man. See, wait a minute, man. You know, did you hear me say or ask anything about him writing a bill for any of that? I asked a simple question. Did Mandela Barnes say anything that was inaccurate about the founding history of this nation? What's the caveat? What's the caveat?
Hate. The caveat.
You don't think there was hate involved? You don't think there was hate involved in the founding of this nation?
I tell you what, do you want to hear voters are going to vote?
No, listen, man. Listen, man.
You don't want to hear
I ask you, if you don't think that the founding of this nation included hate, you don't think the enslavement of people, you don't think the enslavement of people included hate. Is that what you're telling me?
We've come. You know what?
I didn't ask you about where we've come.
Civil Rights Act.
I didn't ask you about how far we've come.
You want to divide this country, Earl. You want to. Like you want to, you don't want to hear the answer why Mandela Barnes is not going to be elected. It's because of now. It's not because of our history. It's not because
of our history, why are they creating commercials that are saying where Ron Johnson is saying he said something about the founding of our country was not right?
He said it was awful, specifically.
Yes.
That was the quote. Which, I mean, historically is true. Death, murder, violence, separation.
Yes.
Like that's why criticize
Connor,
someone for pointing out.
I loved having conversations with you when you picked up the phone. You refuse to do that anymore.
So oh, because I just let you on.
Includes you.
Oh, because I know it's you, so I just let you on because I'm just supposed to scream
hey,
you
CJ.
And talk to you.
Hey, CJ.
But
let's try to stay on topic. CJ, let's try to stay on topic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
It's fine.
I'm going to tell you why Mandela Barnes isn't going to get elected. You don't want to hear it.
No, I already know why Mandela Barnes. I already know why Mandela Barnes is not going to get elected. It is because there are racist people who are going to believe
Campaign is based on race.
Hey, CJ, the people who are playing the race card is Ron Johnson and Republicans.
No, they're not.
Every commercial I see, they're showing black people. Doing something, breaking a law, and they're somehow tying that into Mandela Barnes. Who's playing the race card?
Yeah, because he believes in no cash bail, Earl.
Okay, so you said I'm the person who's trying to divide the country. I'm not the person commercials. I'm not the person showing commercials and trying to.
But you're saying that it's all race. It's all race.
Look,
that's what you're claiming.
I am saying that the commercials that I am watching from the conservative and the Republican Party towards Mandela Barnes, at the root of it is racism. Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Well, it's not true. The mere fact that there were even white hoodlums or whatever you want to call them that burned our cities, burned our businesses, and your party turned away until January 6th. And then all of a sudden crime is important to your party. Well, the mere fact is we've had crime rising for the last 2.5 years.
Hey, CJ.
And your party watched it.
Hey, CJ.
And Mandela Barnes wrote a no cash
bail. Hey, CJ, let me tell you something, man.
Still believes
hey, CJ, let me tell you something. You don't live in Milwaukee. I live in Milwaukee where there's a lot of crime. Okay, so let me finish my point, man. I live in Milwaukee where there's a lot of crime, and I resent the fact of you and others who want to talk about crime is one of the number one issues in this country, and as if you are somehow worried about crime. You don't live in an area where
you don't. I live in Madison.
Okay.
I saw State Street destroyed.
Let me tell you something, man. Madison is listed as one of the safest places in the entire nation.
It used to be.
There is no used to be. You look it up. It's that way now. So don't come to me with that. What I'm saying
well,
to you,
true, Earl.
So what I'm saying to you, CJ, and others, is that what is taking place with these commercials is a dog whistle that Republicans and Ron Johnson, and those of us who've been around a while remember a Willie Lynch.
Who wrote the no cash bail bill?
Let me tell you something about a no cash bail. I'll tell you this about no cash bail.
Who wrote it?
Hey, listen. It does not matter. He could have wrote it. It didn't mean it had to be passed
for the voters.
Hey, let me tell you something, man. Mandela Barnes couldn't pass any bill. If he wrote it, there are the people who passed it. So the voters and the voters who believe that are like you, CJ. They're uninformed because if they somehow think that Mandela Barnes wrote a bill and passed it himself, they're uninformed.
Well, simply not the case.
Earl still
believes it. Believes it, and voters are finding out what he believes.
And let me tell you something. Voters understand this. They understand that Ron Johnson is a man who's doing everything within his power to destroy Social Security and Medicare.
That is so untrue.
Well, listen, man. That's no more untrue than what you say about Mandela Barnes. So you can't say, you can't, on the one hand, pontificate the dribble that you are pontificating.
It's not
and
dribble,
say and
Earl.
Say and
the,
say
the
and say it's true.
What
well,
and believe.
Well, the voters, let me say this. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.
They all greedy. I don't care for no public speaking. And they like to wonder where I've been. Protecting my soul in the valley of silence.
You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You know, it is really frustrating to me. Anybody who has watched the direction and the trajectory of the commercials that Ron Johnson and Republicans have put out over and over again, hammering Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, would know what's at the root of those commercials, and no other reason. And it's dog whistles, and it's dog whistles, and those dog whistles are there for a reason. Let's go to Bob quickly. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Yes, the girl. This is Bob from Wisconsin, the East Coast. One of the issues that I see with the incarceration is to establish a place to have manufacturing done cheaply. They let the prisoners work they pay them squat daily, and that's a big deal.
You know, Bob, the prison industrial complex that sprang up in the 60s and 70s, clearly they brought manufacturing into those prisons, and people who really don't know, those people are forced to work for slave wages.
And pay rent on their cell and buy their food.
Yeah, it becomes for profit prison industry, and so when you do that, then you need a product. If you got a business and your business is incarceration, then the product is the human body. I remember distinctly when they came up with three strikes, you're out, truth in sentencing, no parole. I remember that. And it was at that point in time that the prison industrial complex expanded, and we wound up, where we are now. Thank you very much for the call. I wish I had more time. Let's go to Don from Milwaukee. Hey, Don. Thank you very much. How you doing, sir?
How you doing, Earl? I got a quick comment on this Mandela Barnes situation. Here's one thing. I hear so much about this term, nice guy. Let's stop playing nice guy. This is politics. It's not too late yet for Mandela. He's got to start taking the gloves off. There's a lot of ammunition. I mean, Johnson's been trying to overthrow the government with these fake electors, and he's been allowed with a lot of schemes. Start getting down and start This is politics. He fights fire with fire. He's a fan of Vladimir Putin. Bring this stuff out. We'll stop. You know, nice guys finish last, Earl.
Don, I don't disagree with you. I've said the exact same thing. There is more than enough ammunition on Ron Johnson. He's been a senator for 12 years. We know that he's always on the wrong side of things in his voting for the average person. He is a guy who I've never once seen one thing that Ron Johnson has done that's been beneficial to the average person. Have you?
Earl, I wish I could say I could disagree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, my gosh, I mean, when someone comes up with the idea of giving Social Security to the stock market, I mean, look at the stock market. What's it been doing? S&P down, NASDAQ down, Dow down. I mean, a lot of pension plans have, back in 2008, pension plans were going under because they put it in the stock. I mean, this is people, there's a lot of people that need the Social Security. He wants to take it from the poor and give it to the rich. That's been his philosophy all along.
This is the same man who doubled.
And that's why Mandela, it's not too late. He's got to get on the stick.
This is the same man who doubled the value of his family's business.
Yeah.
Doubled the value. He knew what he was doing and didn't deny it.
That's
And yet,
and he's the same guy that bought a $2 million vacation home in Florida. So when he gets off from Washington, he don't come to Wisconsin. He goes to Florida at taxpayers' expense. Of course, you got to have the airplane fare. I mean,
but as long as he has, you know, guys like CJ who think, you know, that Ron Johnson.
Chuck E. Cheese.
we just have to understand that what is coming down the pike is only going to get worse.
Yeah, well, I was afraid I was afraid this was going to happen. I knew right away because there were little rumblings before that, you know, that he was irresponsible and all that kind of stuff. And I knew this was going to come, but I didn't think
Let me ask you, Don. Let's say, okay, he's irresponsible.
That's what that's the picture they're trying to paint.
I know, but okay. I'll say, yeah, let's say, okay, he's irresponsible. What's worse, being a little irresponsible or setting up, for all the rich people to get richer and the poor people to get poor, speaking of being disingenuous.
Oh, you better believe it, huh, Earl? Well, okay, then. I'm glad we're probably running out of time, but I'm glad I got my two cents in. But the idea is, please, Mandela, start getting those gloves off. Another thing, too, I've been waiting for him to send me something so I can donate to his campaign. I get nothing from him. I don't know what he's doing.
Let me say this. One of the things that's going on is the national... Democratic Party is running this campaign, and I, like you, think that they need to do something to step up and change the trajectory.
Well, you know, I didn't like that idea with Elizabeth and Warren sticking her
nose.
Hey,
Don.
I did not like that.
Hey, Don, I got to go. Thank you very much, man.
Yep.
Really appreciate
you too.
It. Thank everybody.
Take care, Earl.
Show go. I want to thank my guest, Ellen Bravo, Larry Miller. I'm going to thank my guest, Alan Borsick, and I want to also thank my guest, Pastor Greg Lewis. All of them made the show go. Thank you to listening to all this. Thank you, Connor. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.